the desert, suddenly comes upon a desk with a young woman behind it, and she informs them that they've taken the wrong route and they're not going to be able to deliver their goods on time unless they turn around. It's an IBM campaign for a new thing called RFID, Radio Frequency ID, and it's all the rage in the corporate sector. It's a small type of chip that's being put in products that allows scanning and tracking of goods all across the country and the world. We're being told that it's a necessary thing because it'll allow corporations to be more efficient, to deliver goods on time. There won't be lost time in deliveries going to the wrong place. But as is usually the case with corporate America, there's other sides to this story as well. Not only are they going to be tracking everything that comes out of Walmart or any other local store, there's talk of putting these things into things such as our passports and our driver's licenses. And in fact, the Real ID Act, which was passed last year, is asking for uniform driver's licenses, which may well include RFID. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Barbara this morning. This is Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And we're going to be spending the morning talking about RFID, the Real ID Act, and we're going to be talking with a very special person who's been working specifically on this, Nicole Ozer, who is the Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Director of the ACLU Northern California chapter. She'll be coming on here in just a few minutes. And we're hoping to be able to get some word out on what's been a rather quiet campaign by the Bush administration to tag everybody, so we can be sort of like those bears that they like to track with the radio frequency collars, and why we need to get out ahead of the curve on this and really make sure it doesn't happen, because it truly is an Orwellian thing. We'll be talking with Nicole here from just a few minutes, and a little later on, after we've had a chance to hear her thoughts about why this is really a bad idea, we'll open up the phone lines and give folks a chance to ask questions and to discuss this latest coming from the Bush administration. So keep ready for this. Like I say, we'll have Nicole on in just a couple of minutes. Ah, good. Well, actually, we have Nicole on the line now, so let's bring her on and get on with what's going to be, I'm sure, a fascinating discussion. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for agreeing to do this so early in the morning. Well, we want to talk to our let our listeners know about RFID and the Real ID legislation that's popping around there. Why don't you start off by giving folks a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of what RFID is all about?
So RFID stands for Radio Frequency Identification, and what it is a tiny computer chip that can be embedded with any kind of information. And these tiny computer chips were originally created for use in the supply chain to put in a product and to be able to track where that product went from the warehouse to the store. What happens is that tiny computer chip, whenever it comes near a reader, transmits whatever information is inside the chip. Some of the listeners might be familiar with RFID technology if they use something like the fast track system to go over a bridge or to go through a toll booth. The transponder in your car has an RFID chip, and as you go through the toll, a reader on the toll booth reads the information that's in that transponder, says, "I am so-and-so, I've paid to go through this toll booth." That same technology that was created to track products and cattle and is now being used to go through toll booths has increasingly, since 9/11, been also considered for use in identification documents like our passports, our driver's licenses. And what would happen is that information, our name, our address, other personal information will be put in that computer chip and then put into our documents. And the problems that we see with that are that the RFID chip can be read at a distance without you ever knowing that it's being read. And so whatever information is put in that chip, whether it be your name, your address, other personal information about you can be read without you knowing it's being read and being used to track or monitor where you are, the information being used for bad purposes like stalking people, secret surveillance, and also an increase in identity theft issues.
So are we talking that, you know, for example, police cars would be capable of being equipped with scanners and could be tracking you from a distance?
What we're talking about here is that readers could be in all sorts of places. Readers can it be anything from above a doorway to being handheld. Right now, readers are available on the market for a couple of $100s that are as small as a Palm Pilot. And so what we're talking about here is not only going into a store or going to an event and being tracked, but potentially being at a political rally, going into a doctor's office, walking down the street and potentially having readers on telephone poles. So the issue here is not knowing when your information is being read and by whom. It could be by the government to track you. It could be by a store to find out, you know, what your buying habits are, where you stop in the store to look at something, or it could be somebody that's trying to steal your personal information to use it for identity theft or other purposes. So there's a whole range of issues with the inclusion of RFID tags and identification documents. And what it really comes down to is that these tags don't belong in the identification documents that we all carry every day, like our driver's licenses, our children's school IDs, medical and benefit cards, and that we should never be forced to carry an RFID embedded document. And those are issues that are not only being dealt with here in California, but nationally.
And this is sort of a backdoor way to impose national identification papers on us.
Absolutely. This issue of RFID tags really hit home in California when the first public school in the nation forced kids as young as 5 years old to carry RFID-embedded school badges. And the parents became extremely concerned when they realized the privacy and security implications of that and fought to stop that at their school. And because of that, the circumstances here in California, a bill was introduced in California to put privacy and security protections on the use of RFID tags in government-issued identification documents like driver's licenses, like school badges. But this is not an issue that's just happening in California. The federal government has now decided to put RFIDs in all U.S. passports, and it was only after civil liberties organizations fought very hard that the government put any kind of protections on those chips to make sure, to try and make sure that that information couldn't be read. So we have RFIDs going into U.S. passports, and we also have a move by the federal government to potentially put RFID tags in all U.S. driver's licenses by 2008. There was a bill rushed through Congress last spring that was attached to an Iraq War Appropriations and Tsunami Appropriations bill called the Real ID Act. And what the Real ID Act did was say that all U.S. driver's licenses, those held in Oregon, those held in California, by 2008 all need to look the same, have the same information on them. All that information needs to be put in a common machine-readable technology, something that can be read by a scanner or a reader, and that all that information needs to be linked through shared databases. This Real ID Act said that if your driver's license does not comply with these requirements, you will not be able to use it to go into a federal building, go onto an airplane, anything federal. And this is really a backdoor approach to national identification documents. Since 9/11, there have been several attempts to create a national ID that were all blocked, but this was a backdoor approach to do that. And currently, the Department of Homeland Security is deciding, what will the common machine-readable technology be? Will it be a magnetic strip that we all have on our driver's license now? Many of us do. Will it be an RFID tag, or will it be some kind of optical scan system? And so that's why it's so important right now to have bills like that in California and other states that are starting to introduce them that say, wait a minute, there are serious problems with RFID tags and identification documents, and we don't want those in all of our driver's licenses.
Now, before we talk a little more about what went on in California, I know that the motor vehicle, you know, the cost to bring this sort of system online is going to run into the billions. Am I correct on that?
The Real ID Act, in addition to potentially having all of these serious privacy implications, is expected to cost in the billions of dollars. It's really an unfunded mandate by the national government to the states to redo the entire DMV system. Right now, it's unclear as to what will happen. Will we all have to go back to the DMV, stand in line, get new driver's licenses in 2008? Along with having a common machine-readable technology in all the driver's licenses, there's a whole new host of authentication procedures. You will have to have a host of documents in order to prove that you should be getting a driver's license. And this is a major problem for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people don't know where their birth certificate is, mm-hmm. or don't have a passport. And so, As many of us know, standing in the DMV line or renewing your driver's license right now is already a huge nightmare. And so the potential of what's going to happen if every person in the state needs to get a new driver's license is something we hopefully will not have to imagine. But at this point, civil liberties organizations and state administrators and National Governors Association are trying to do something about this bill. And for more information about it, www.realnightmare.org has a lot of information about the Real ID Act and what organizations are trying to do to roll it back and ensure that there isn't a nightmare for everyone in the country.
Well, let me jump in here and let folks who are just tuning in know that they're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Barbara this morning on Talk Radio. And we're speaking with Nicole Ozer, Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Director of the ACLU Northern California Chapter. And if you want to join us in this conversation, we're talking about our... And I think we have a caller on the line who has a question for you, Nicole. Good morning, caller. Well, maybe we don't have the caller after all. They were there a moment ago.
Maybe I answered all of his questions.
Oh, that's it. That could be. You anticipated all what he was going to ask. So, now in Sacramento, I mean, California, there was legislation moving through the state legislature to make this happen, wasn't there?
Absolutely. There's currently legislation moving through in the state assembly to put in necessary privacy and security protections for the use of RFID tags in those wallet you're going to find things like our driver's license, our library card, our medical card. And the bill has three parts. The first part is that there's a prohibition on skimming, which means that it would be a misdemeanor for somebody to get the information off of my RFID tag without my authorization. So it would be a misdemeanor for me to be walking around and have someone use a reader to get my information off of that chip. The second is that when the government decides to use RFID tags in identification documents, then privacy protections would have to be put in place. For example, as I mentioned, any kind of information can be put on an RFID tag, but this bill says you can't put my name, you can't put my address. All you could put is a unique identifier number that isn't linked to anything else, not my social security number, not my driver's license. And that's to try and keep as little information on the chip as possible so that as little information could be potentially taken by somebody through a reader. And the third is that given the privacy and security issues with RFID tags, the fact that they can be read at a distance by anyone with a reader without you knowing it, taking a timeout, a three-year timeout before putting RFID tags in mass distributed documents like driver's licenses and K-12 student ID cards, benefit cards, to test and make sure that the privacy protections really work before they go out in millions of driver's licenses in the state of California or in other states.
Mm-hmm.
So three parts of the bill to make sure that it's against the law for someone to take my information without me knowing it. The second part, making sure that there's as little information on there that can be taken as possible. And third, let's test those privacy and security protections before we let the genie out of the bottle.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got our callers back to have a question. So let's see. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. So you can hear me this time?
Yes.
Okay, good. This RFID thing, I'm kind of a conspiracy kind of a guy, but conspiracy means that there's obviously something going on and that there's proof of at least something. So the RFID, I think, is something that they're using to set up for martial law for when the energy crunches and chaos starts to erupt in the next couple years. And they said, from what I understand, that they've cut up the United States in territories. And that there's five territories that you can get into if you have this national ID card. But if you owe debt or you don't have the right paperwork, you won't be able to travel from territory to territory. And that includes Canada and Mexico because they're going to open up all the borders. But the RFID is just one of the foundations to make sure that they have control over the population, and it's starting to really show out now. The picture is starting to be painted now. You really can start seeing, here comes the RFI. They're building the big booth down in Utah on the freeway.
Uh-huh. Now, do you have a question here for our guests?
So I'm wondering when they're going to, what's the time frame of what they're trying, when are they trying to get this out into the mainstream public? When's this going to become a mandatory thing for, like, me and you? And is it going to be, you know, I mean, how long do we have until it starts coming into our, into the driver's license? When is that?
Nicole?
Well, thank you very much for your question, caller. By the Real ID Act, which I discussed a little bit before, and you can find out more on realnightmare.org, was a federal bill moved through Congress, and it mandates that all of our driver's licenses look the same. The Department of Homeland Security is currently determining what the technology on that license will be, whether it's a magnetic strip, whether it's an RFID tag, whether it's some kind of optical scan. At this point, the DHS has not made a determination of that, and that's why this is a great time for action to let your congressional representatives know that you don't want RFID tags on driver's licenses, to lobby local legislators in the state to have bills that go through that go through the legislature to put privacy and security protections on the use of RFID tags in state identification documents. Bills like that we have moving through California, and more information about the California RFID bill is available on the ACLU of Northern California website at www.aclunc.org. So Right now is the time to take action to ensure that RFID tags do not end up on U.S. driver's licenses. So I definitely encourage you to let your congressional representatives know your feelings about it, as well as lobby local legislators to introduce similar bills.
Okay.
Doing a great thing, and it's really good that you're bringing this stuff out. We really need to watch out for this RFI and this Patriot Act.
Right.
Well, you know, because once they're really pushing this Patriot Act and the RFI, because this is what they need to start establishing control over us.
Okay. Well, thank you for bringing that up. We've got to move on because we have another caller on the line. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine.
Okay, thanks. I'm new to this RFID. I was unfamiliar with it until hearing about it this morning. I just want to be clear on it that basically this is a little transmitter that's, you know, if it were to be on our driver's license, and it's just going to act as a little transmitter emanating from our rear pocket where our wallet is or our handbags, and whoever we walk by with a scanner has access to read this information. I just wanted to get clarify that point, if that is such the case, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yes, it's a tiny computer chip, and the computer chip, when it comes in contact with a reader, transmits the information through radio waves to the reader. So anyone that has a reader, if the information on the computer chip is not protected through encryption or other kinds of privacy protections, anyone with a reader that comes into proximity of that computer chip, whether it be in your wallet, in your purse, around your neck, wherever it is, the information can be read. And we hear a lot from the RFID industry that the information can only be read from a very short distance, and so, you know, we're paranoid about this. But Congress actually asked the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, to research privacy and security concerns of RFID tags when RFID tags were being considered for use in passports. And the GAO itself reported that some of these chips could be read as far as 30 feet away. And so, you know, the GAO, hardly a bastion of radical thinking, is one of the ones that has been raising the security and privacy concerns. And so that's, you know, since Senator Simidian in the state of California introduced SB 768, which is the RFID bill, the security and privacy implications have only become more clear. And that's why here in California, there's been widespread support for the bill from across the political and social spectrum. As I said, there are concerns about everything from secret monitoring to the security of women and children to identity theft. And that's why we have groups from the right, the left, and the center, women's groups, children's groups, conservative groups, all coming together to support this bill and say, you know, we really need to take a step back and put privacy and security protections on the use of RFID tags in identification documents, that no one should be forced to carry an RFID-embedded document that is transmitting personal information about them without them knowing.
Well, I'm going to jump in here and remind folks, or let folks know who just tuned in, that they're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Baza, filling in for Barbara this morning on Talk Radio. We have Nicole Ozer, Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Director of the ACLU Northern California Chapter, on the air talking about RFIDs and the real identity legislation that seems to be another Orwellian thing coming down the pike at us. And if you want to join us in that conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And I just want to remind folks that because we do have Nicole on one line, where we've got a limited number of incoming lines for calls, so it can get a little backed up. So be patient. And I think we have another caller on the line. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Nicole and Dave.
Good morning.
I was going to suggest, if we are forced to carry these little items, that perhaps you could develop a lead sleeve or some sort of blocking mechanism you could put around your ID card, so that the only time it could be read is when you physically pull it out of this little holder that some genius must design to protect our privacy in case the extreme does happen.
Yes, actually, that's often referred to as a Mylar shield or a Faraday cage. And in the California bill, SB 768, one of the privacy protections that we put in there is for the issuance of Mylar shields or Faraday cages. One of the problems is, and that's actually one of the privacy protections that civil liberties groups finally convinced the federal government to put in U.S. passports. U.S. passports were originally going to have RFID tags in there, free and clear. The information could be read potentially by anyone. We'd have little homing beacons saying, you know, American citizen here, whatever.
Yeah. Right.
And after much discussion in the GAO report, the federal government came back and said, all right, we're going to put in something called a basic access control, which means that before the information can be read, before the RFID tag becomes activated, it will have to be read by first a scanner that you know the scanner is reading it. And number two, the cover of the passport will have metal fibers in it so that there's some more protection for the information. The problem is that in the driver's license context, you use your driver's license much more than you use a passport. You take your driver's license out much more than you would take out a passport. And each time you take it out, that information would be free and clear for someone to scan. So that's why in California we've combined the Mylar shield with other protections like encryption and authentication to have double ways of securing that information if it is used in government documents. And we want to test that in some of the lesser distributed documents before it goes into the mass distributed documents.
Okay, that's good news, Nicole. Thanks a lot. I was just trying to think of ways that I personally could get around it and to prevent others from reading it, and that was
absolutely
what I had in mind. So.
Absolutely. Well, you're exactly on the right track, but there are some additional things that would need to be added in there to ensure that information would stay safe.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, caller. I know we're running up short on your time here, Nicole. Can we squeeze in a couple more calls?
Sure. I can stay about another 5 minutes.
Okay, great. Let's bring on the next caller.
Hey, I have a suggestion. Why don't we just implant something at birth, a little GPS in the earlobe, and then they'd know who we are and what we are 24/7?
Well, actually, I mean, I hate to sort of be the black helicopter person here, but RFID tags have actually been approved recently for implantation into the skin and has been used in terms of marketing for medical issues in terms of people who have diabetes or other kinds of diseases, instead of carrying a bracelet around their wrist, would have a chip implanted to say, I have this disease, you know, or I'm allergic to this kind of item. So that's definitely something that has been on the horizon, and certainly not what we want to have happen.
Right. I don't think a misdemeanor is enough. It needs to be a felony. You know, if somebody is stealing your RFID number, a misdemeanor is not enough. It needs to be a stronger punishment.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues there. One of the things is that whether it be a misdemeanor or a felony, that because of the nature of RFID technology, the fact that that information can be read without you knowing that it's being read, it's going to be very hard to catch someone in any event because you don't know the information's being read. It's like when your information is taken through identity theft, but you have no idea who took it or when it was taken. And so that's why we've tried to put in the bill, while we have a misdemeanor provision, putting things into the bill from the front end that ensure that information cannot be read. And the best way to protect the information would be not to have RFID tags in those documents at all. And that's why it's a great time to make it clear to your representatives that this is not a technology that you think is appropriate for inclusion in your driver's license or other documents that you all carry.
Well, with a simple issue of, say, credit cards, they're unable to deal with security issues. So I don't see how this is solving anything.
Could you elaborate that question?
Well, with credit cards, we've seen database breaches where people, people in far countries get a hold of mass numbers of credit cards and they can use them to purchase all sorts of things. We're not able to deal with the security issues on just a credit card, let alone something like RFID.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Our RFID tags in identification documents just exacerbate the problem. California is already the third largest state with problems of identity theft, and to have that information potentially free and clear and able to be accessed without you even knowing it just exacerbates the problem, as well as other issues in terms of fundamental privacy and also personal security. So there's a range of problems with inclusion of RFID tags. And credit card companies, the bill that I'm working on deals only in the government context in terms of not being forced to carry government documents that have RFID tags, but credit card companies are starting to look at the use of RFID tags, and other parts of the consumer spectrum. Walmart is now telling all of its suppliers that they need to put RFID tags on their products, and it's a big issue in the consumer context of, will you be forced to keep that RFID tag in that product so that potentially your habits with that product are tracked? And so this RFID is a huge issue both in the consumer context and in the government context, and I encourage people to go to the ACLU website at aclunc.org. And also there is a new book called Spy Chips by Catherine Albrecht that talks about RFID in many contexts, and I encourage people to learn more about it. It isn't a crazy conspiracy theory. We have very reasonable legislators here in California that realize the issues involved. We have the Government Accountability Office in D.C. very concerned about this. So for those listeners out there that think that this is black helicopter, futuristic, Orwellian discussion, this is the here and now, and there are serious implications, and if we don't take action now, we will be waking up in the next couple years with RFID technology in many of the things that we carry and use every day. So definitely encourage listeners to learn more about it and to get involved.
Right. And I'm going to have to jump in here because the government wants us to say this is KBOO 90.7 FM that you're listening to. And I'm Dave Mazza filling in for Barbara this morning. And we've been talking with Nicole Ozer, Technology and Civil Liberties Policy Director for the ACLU Northern California Chapter. She's been giving us a rather uncomfortable view of where we're going in terms of RFID and national identification papers and what have you. And I want to thank you for getting up early this morning and sharing your thoughts and the information on this, Nicole.
Thank you. I appreciate your interest in the issue, and I encourage your listeners to learn more about it and to mobilize to take action about it. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, and keep up the good fight.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And let's see. I think we probably have another caller on the line. We can continue this conversation and see where folks think we should be going on this issue of RFID. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, good morning. Wait a minute. Let me turn down my radio.
Thank you. I want to remind folks, if you are calling in, make sure your radio is turned down because we get some really bad feedback when it comes on.
Okay. Very often with something of this sort, if you just pass a powerful magnet over it, it buggers up everything so that it's useless. And if that doesn't work with these RFIDs, I'm sure that somebody can invent something that will do that. Now, with that in mind, it seems to me that not only if they're going to start sticking these things in all of our documents that we carry with us, not only are they going to have to do that, but they're also going to have to pass some draconian laws against disrupting them.
Good point. I mean, of course, I'm sure that the Bush administration would have no problems in trying to propose such draconian laws.
Oh, absolutely. They would go right ahead with it, and the public seems to be fairly easy to bamboozle. I think the best thing to do, as the guest said, is to try to nip this in the bud and see that the bloody things don't get into the documents to begin with.
There you go. The other frightening part of this, of course, and we didn't really have time this morning with Nicole to go into that, is that these things are being embedded in the various products we buy. For example, Walmart has already been requiring RFID pieces installed in clothing and what have you for the purpose of inventory tracking. Now, they haven't implemented that fully, but that's the direction they want to go. And so even if you destroy the chip in your driver's license and passport, there's still something out there with some piece of your information. And if you paid, say, with credit card, you know, they kind of can access data on you that way. So it's a pretty frightening set of circumstances here.
Well, one more reason not to buy anything from Walmart. And I think that, you know, what we're going to need is somebody to invent something that will allow us to detect these every time we go shopping. You know, when we get home, we pull out this deal and pass it over all of the things that we bought and locate these chips and then take steps to disable them.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
What we need is some clever inventor who knows about all of this technology, who can come up with this stuff. And then, of course, if the government doesn't like it, he's likely to catch a lot of flack.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time.
No, it sure wouldn't.
Okay.
Well, okay, thank you.
Thank you much. And you're listening to KBLO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza. We just got done talking with Nicole Ozer of the ACLU regarding these RFID chips, which the government is proposing to put into driver's licenses and passports, and which they will allow them to track us quite closely and have all sorts of access to all sorts of information on us. These chips are also being used in the private sector as well. Want to join us in a discussion that's been going on about this? Give us a call at 503-231-8187, and let's bring the next caller on.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
I was so glad to hear this show because it's an important issue. I want to clarify what is exactly the radio frequency identification device. Mm-hmm. Take yourself and go over to the Safeway or the Walmart, or, well, preferably not the Walmart, but go to your local store and go for the expensive items like the teeth whitening and the certain cosmetic devices and so forth. They all have these tags because they are very expensive. And they want to be able to scan as if they're stolen and swift out of the store. Now, look at these carefully. You can actually look at them. You can take one off of the box of say, teeth whitening materials. And it looks like a little maze of electric wires or little wires, almost like a computer chip, but not quite. These are the things that we can find right now, and we can say, oh, that's what the RFID is. Mm-hmm. But I have an issue that they're not actually powered, but readable. And that's the important part, I think an important part to remember as well, is there's no battery, there's no electricity involved. It's just readable from these scanning devices. And I'm all for this idea of a Mylar shield. If this all comes down, I don't know, maybe I'll shield my whole body in Mylar. I don't know. But these things, you can find them. You can find them. You go to the store, go to your local grocery store, find an expensive item, such as teeth whitening or cosmetic products, and look carefully and you'll see these tags. And they're even frightening to look at because they look so ultra-modern and scary. Mm-hmm. But that's my thought.
Okay. Well, thank you, caller. Maybe we all should be investing in Mylar stock in the future here. It could be a big upswing in demand for it. Do we have another caller on the line, I believe? Let's hear what you have to say. Good morning, caller.
Yeah. If these chips, well, the documents really aren't the problem. We can protect those. We can even stop the chips from getting in the documents. But if these chips are in the individual items that we buy, that's individual serial numbers for each item you buy. Now, with the massive linking of computer databases and all of that stuff, if you buy anything with a credit card, it's going to have the serial number of the item you buy. So you're going to be a walking serial number. Your tennis shoes are going to have serial numbers, your socks, your shirt, your underwear, your gum. Everything's going to have a tag of who you are. So the IDs themselves being readable is almost irrelevant.
That's actually, you know, I mean, we're already at some point at that place with stores that offer these special discount cards.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I won't use those. That information is being used for insurance and all sorts of stuff now.
Exactly. And they you know, sell it to for marketing purposes and what have you. And once it gets out there, you're floating out there in the system.
Right. And we've already seen our government use hire contractors to get around laws and stuff like that. What's to say that the NSA or the other security agencies aren't going to hire some market research company to follow people at that point? Then you're just then they're getting around another law.
And yeah.
Man, you're just thinking, anyway. thanks for the conversation.
All right. Well, thank you much. And you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza. We're talking about RFID and National ID Act. We had the ACLU on a little earlier giving us the lowdown on efforts by the government to keep a tag on us in a very real sense. Let's bring our next caller on the line. Good morning, caller.
Hi. I came in about 10 minutes into the initial discussion, but I'm not sure if the specific technology aspects of the RFID chips were discussed. Specifically, the way that the card is read passively is that the maze of electronic wires that your previous caller was talking about is an antenna, and a radio signal is sent to the antenna, and the computer chip inside of the RFID reformulates the radio signal and radiates it backwards through the antenna. So that's how they're read. That leads to a couple of conclusions about avoidance of being detected. The radio frequency bands which RFID tags operate on can be basically bombed with white noise, which will completely disrupt reading of chips within the radius of that radio signal that is emitting in that radio frequency band. And in terms of reading chips and figuring out where the chips exist on your personal items, there are radio frequency tag readers available for purchase to citizens. They cost around $5,000, and most radio frequency tags can be rewritten. So if you don't want to tear through the through your clothing to dig out the embedded tag in the fiber, you can rewrite it with a blank serial number. So maybe that'll become the next need-to-have technology piece for the home.
Sounds like a potential jobs program as well.
Yeah, so I just wanted to let people know about those. There are some avenues available to not just being a walking billboard of your personal habits.
Of course, it'll be difficult to do any of that when they start embedding the chips in us, but
yeah, and especially because they can make tags which are not rewritable, so you can't rewrite it. But I guess they're gonna have to catch us physically before they can embed it. So
I can hear the helicopter. Everybody. Thank you, caller.
Yeah,
and. That's it. Our engineers remind us, just don't go to sleep, because you know when you wake up, you're going to feel a little different. Let's bring on our next caller.
Yeah, hello. Those of us that, I got to take a breath. It's overwhelming. Those of us that are living in housing authority buildings on Oregon Health Plan or on welfare or Social Security income, we're already being tracked. How can we protect us ourselves from this new sick crap? That's what I'd like to know. I guess we can't. We don't have the income or the connections already to do that. And also, I'm just wondering, are cell phones a good way of keeping track of us, too? So I'll just put that out to the airways, et cetera.
Well, I know that some cell phones come with the, the satellite location system, which I'm drawing a blank on, so that, you know, in theory, GPS, thank you, GPS system, so that, you know, in theory, if you misplace it, you can find it. Also, that means that if someone else is tracking it, they know where your cell phone is. They're marketing SUVs with that technology as well, which is supposed to be, I guess, if you get lost, you can be easily found, but it can also be found when you're not necessarily lost, I suppose. So the technology's out there, and I'm interested. Are you still there, caller? I guess we lost her. I was interested in what she meant by being tracked in the public housing. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, obviously, people are being required to have all sorts of ID to participate in those things. I wasn't aware that they're doing anything electronically, but who knows. But, at any rate, do we have another caller on the line? Let's bring them on. Good morning, caller. Good morning.
Is that me?
That's you.
Well, I'm sorry I missed Nicole Ozer. I hope that you'll get in touch with her and... I don't know, you probably already did tell her about the exciting stuff that we've been doing here in Oregon by forcing the DMV to acknowledge that it never had any authority to put licenses in our pockets. I think the RFI thing is a larger danger than just being put in our licenses like most people have commented this morning. It can be put in everything that we ever pick up and touch.
Mm-hmm.
However, we can choose to not touch those things. But one of the things that we commonly think that we have to do is carry a driver license. And I want to make everybody aware that the DMV is going through its death throes trying to keep a lid on their new optional titling rule. And I'd like to have you talk on the radio more about that, maybe another show, all the information that you've been getting on this, and maybe you could even share what you've got with Kathleen Stevenson, and she could share with you what she has. She's been compiling information about the DMV's new rule that allows a member of the public to pay their money and ask to carry a driver license if they want. But they basically, by adopting that rule last February, admitted that prior to February 16th of last year, they never had any authority to cause us to carry driver licenses. And I should probably give people the number of the optional rule, just in case anybody's paying attention, they can look it up on the web at ODOT's website. The optional titling rule is 735-022-0120. But, Dave, the most significant development in the last month has been that we got a hold of the mailing list that has everybody's name on it that was supposed to get or did get notice of this proposed rule. And it's supposed to go out to affected persons. Guess how long the list is?
I would assume quite lengthy.
It's one page. There's 60-some entries. Meaning only one thing, that since it's required by law that everybody that's going to be potentially choosing to title their vehicles and become subject to all of the laws, since it was required and they didn't get it, the rule does not exist. Therefore, what they admitted was illegal before they adopted this rule is still illegal. That's the significance of it. So we're having some legislators bother legislative counsel for an agency rule review at this point. And we've got a big lever on some of the legislators. For the chairs and co-chairs of the transportation committees last session were on that list, and their names were hand-entered on that list at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
So we have them certified as knowledgeable about this thing, and we're going to pry on them to ask legislative counsel to do an agency review and see if we can get some publicity
mm-hmm.
around this scandal that has been shaping up for decades.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the biggest danger about this RFI thing.
Uh-huh.
We have already become softened in the heads to the point where we think somebody can tell the people in whom all power is inherent that they have to stand in line, they have to hand over their money, they have to carry a card, when none of that historically has ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy I want to introduce everybody to, our new Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, very nice guy, Paul de Muniz. I talked to him just before Christmas, and he sent me the preeminent case on this issue. He sent it to me right off of his Westlaw account, so it's got the Supreme Court's account number at the bottom of every page to verify that he sent it. And I'd like to make people aware that the Committee for Appropriate Enforcement of Motor Vehicle Laws is having meetings at the Bud Clark's Coffee House over in Southwest Portland,
okay.
19th and Jefferson, on the first and third Saturdays of the month. And people who are interested in avoiding RFIs on their driver licenses should come out at 9 o'clock to those meetings.
Okay, well, that's good information. Thanks
a lot. As long as we're concerned about RFIs, let's go with the progress that we've already got. Let's try to stop this thing before we get too hysterical about what we don't even have to carry.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. All right.
Good
you have
point.
A good one.
You
Bye.
Have a good one, too, now. And for folks just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Barbara this morning, and we've been talking about RFIDs, the chips that seem to be everyone wants us to carry, and the impacts that's going to have on us as a society, especially in light of the fact of federal efforts to make this a mandatory item in our driver's license and passports. If you want to get involved in this conversation with us, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Keep using the term Orwellian. It's an overused phrase, but what can we say? The administration just keeps knocking them out there into that brave new world, to switch to a different author. Interesting stuff they're proposing. I mean, the DMVs, the ACLU did a white paper on just looking at it from the practical end of what this would mean for the DMV. And, you know, it's as usual with this administration's proposals, they're not looking at all at what the impacts would actually be on the agencies to try to implement this thing of putting this in, you know, having uniform driver's licenses with the chips in there. It's, you know, basically going to cost billions of dollars, which nobody's figured out where that's going to come from. It's also going to, you know, have a serious impact on how DMV does its business. I mean, for example, you know, you're basically not going to be able to have any same-day license services because you're going to have to go through this whole process of having a special ID made and presenting certain materials. It's going to be a much more laborious process, more like getting your passport, where you come in, pay your money, and then some date later they mail the stuff to you. They're figuring, of course, that to deal with the cost, they're going to have to shut down offices. They'd be eliminating internet and mail transactions that they do now. You know, it's getting so you can do more and more through the mail. You don't have to go to the DMV. That's probably going to go by the wayside. It's just, you know, it's buying into a real mess, which, as usual, the Bush administration hasn't really given much thought to. And then, of course, there's, you know, just the whole privacy thing and looking at that. And, you know, sensory overload. I mean, at some point, We can gather the data until the cows come home, but, you know, you can only process so much of it and make sense of it. We certainly have seen in the past that there's been no shortage of data coming in. There was no shortage of data coming in the year 2001, and yet we were unable, apparently, to take effective action to prevent what happened on September, or to, you know what we were doing when we went in there. So, you know, the effectiveness of these sorts of things, they sound great, you know, uniform system, lots of data, we can pull up all this information. Generally, what you end up with is more something out of, sort of a Brazil type situation where, you know, wrong information's being entered, or the computer has a glitch and is punching out the wrong thing, and the next thing you know, some innocent person's being tossed in jail. So that's more likely the future we're facing here. But if you have a different idea, if you're just really anxious to get that chip sewn into your shirt or put into your brain, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe this isn't an Orwellian nightmare. Maybe this is going to make life much easier for all of us, that we can be safe in knowing what's going on. Oh, okay. Well, let's bring on the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Dave. And I'm always so happy when you're hosting on this hour.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes. You're a delight. Anyway, I missed the early part of this show this morning, and I'm so sorry because I think I'm not too up on what you're speaking about. But when you talk about the data gathering and the data gathering in 2001, I think they had all the data that they wanted, because I think that's what helped with the orchestration, don't you?
Distinct possibility.
I mean, each day that I go on, and the things that I hear, the things that I see, my belief is stronger. Let's just put it that way. I believed it at the moment that it happened. When someone called and told me to turn on my TV, I thought, uh-oh, this is what going on. This is what, and keep in mind, there really is a they. This is what they are doing to frighten us, and sure heck worked. So, anyway, that's just what I'm thinking. I think they had all the data they wanted, and it all worked out perfectly, because who knows who all was in on that orchestration. But I'm absolutely positive that, you know, some of the administration certainly was. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Well, thank you for that. And before we bring on our next caller, I just want to remind folks that you want to stay tuned to KBOO this morning, because, as usual, we've got a great lineup. At 9, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don reviewing the latest movies. At 9:30, hear an interview with John Stauber of the Center for Media and Democracy and author of Mad Cow USA. He'll discuss recent events related to mad cow disease. That's going to be a really good one you don't want to miss. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller speaks with Jennifer Van Bergen about the unitary executive theory of governance. Then at 10:30, Andrew talks with Elizabeth Holtzman about impeachment. She served on the House Judiciary Committee when President Richard Nixon was impeached. Ah, the good old days of Richard Nixon. I miss him. And at 11, Democracy Now! Will look at Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez's speech yesterday defending the domestic spying program. An in-studio guest will be journalist and Dr. Ali Fadil, who was detained by U.S. forces in Iraq. He'll talk about his recent experience when American troops blasted their way into his home. So, lots of good reasons to keep it tuned at 90.7 FM, and with still about not quite a half hour left, you can join us in the conversation here by calling 503-231-8187. Let's bring on our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. This is Mike Jordan.
Good morning.
Hi. Basically, I was, with regards to sort of identity theft, with RFID sort of technologies, I was just wondering, why couldn't we do something similar to what the banking industry does? And that usually, you know, identity theft really comes down to, what do I gain by stealing this person's identity? And there's one industry that's consistently good at sort of protecting our identities and our assets, and that's the banking industry. And what they do is they issue with our ATM cards, they issue PIN numbers, which are you know, they're basically sort of passwords that allow us to that allow them to sort of encrypt and sort of hash those passwords before they're sort of transported, or however they're you know, then worked into the ATM system, you know. So I was just wondering, why can't we use some similar technology, some sort of password type encryption technology with these cards, in addition to the cards just being scanned for the information, and that way, you know, consumers and individuals could be protected because they hold the key to the use of their ID cards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a thought to answer off there.
Okay, well, that's a good idea, I think. Of course, I think the problem is it runs against the intent of the drafters of the legislation, who they already don't like the safeguards we have for our privacy. And so this is a way to do an end run around it. So, but certainly it seems like if it looks like we can't get rid of these things, that's something to at least argue for as a, you know, fallback position to prevent them having just open access to who we are. Of course, personally, if they want to steal my identity, I let them have it. They don't know what they're buying when they do that. Let's bring on our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I just wanted to clarify a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
There are active tags that do transmit data, that do have a battery in the tag itself. Also, our government is planning to implement them in their own documents so that they can trace leaked documents. And I find that a very chilling effect also. I encourage people to read spy chips. They can go to their local library and request to get in line for that. It's an excellent resource.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your effort.
Thank you. And, of course, they will be scanning your chip and knowing that you've read spy chips, but that's okay, too. No, it's supposed to be I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I've heard it's an excellent coverage of this this whole issue, and encourage people to get their hands on it. Let's move on to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I just wanted to bring up one point that, you know, when you do the checkouts,
mm-hmm.
and they've got the little demagnetizer there.
Yeah.
Make sure you carry a big magnet around with you when you go through the store, and just wipe out all the little codes that they've got on everything. Yeah, just stand up for your rights to, you know, just wipe them out. You know, if they don't have anything on there, then, hey, you know, I've had lost a credit card that way, and it stayed lost, and I don't want it back. So, you know, if you can, you know, just anything you can do to upset their little game. So,
a little monkey wrenching.
Yeah, it's fun to do, and can throw a big monkey wrench eventually into the system.
Okay, well, thank you for that little piece of advice. It seems when I go to the grocery store, I manage to always pick the items that have not gotten onto the scanner yet. So I'm the guy who's holding up the line and everybody wondering what I'm buying. But
that's good. It keeps them wondering.
Yeah, so either someone's already been by with a magnet, or they're just not very efficient with doing the implementing the data. There's that whole scenario, too, of course, is, you know, how accurate is the data that gets in there? So,
well, taking the tag off of the Oreos and putting it on the Flavorite brand is always fun to do too. So, you know, any little bit of a sabotage you can do,
all right,
within reason.
That's right.
Peace, dude.
Yeah, take care. Well, there you go. Another a little more advice on how to beat the machine, and certainly we don't endorse any sort of criminal activity here at KBOO by no means, so by any means, but just things to think about. Well, I think we have another caller on the line. Let's go ahead and just keep taking calls. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Question on these personal identification tags. If we tag the citizens here in the United States and we can't tag the illegal citizens, what's that going to do to those who aren't tagged? Is that going to put us against them? I just wonder what kind of conflicts that's going to bring into our country, as we have many, many people here who are anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
I think certainly going to cause conflicts.
I think, you know, that's the whole point, is that the you know, these chips are sort of the entryway into national identification. And if you don't have your papers, you're not, you know, officially a part of this country. And therefore, you're going to be excluded from access to services, access to getting identification. It just will further, bury the immigrants coming into this country, through other than proper channels, or who've come in, you know, and just can't provide the necessary identification. I mean, you know, my grandfather came in, you know, was born in Italy, but always insisted he was born in Illinois, and he probably didn't have any papers showing how he got here. I myself, when I got my first time I got my passport, I had a hard time finding my birth certificate. So, I mean, it's not just people coming across the border. It's people who are born here who could have difficulty, you know, passing that bar and being able to be honored with having their own little chip of citizenship.
Right. I have some employees that they have difficulty in these areas, and I find that I've had to weigh the conflict that I see that's going to arise within our country. You know, I work with some good people, but and then some I don't hire because I know that they don't have good paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
I can see both sides. I mean, I can see wanting to be here, but I can also see that there are many people here who are causing quite a cost to our country, or to you know, they use the health systems without, I don't think, any intentions to pay. You know, the emergency room seems to be their doctor's office. I just see a problem arising, and just wondering, you know, what all this can lead to. So thank you.
You're welcome. Well, and I would say it's going to lead to no good, as most things coming out of this administration appear to be targeted. And just a little reminder that maybe immigrants are using the emergency rooms a lot. So are a lot of other folks. It's becoming our doctor, our doctor of record, our GP, as more and more people fall out of the safety net and no longer have health insurance, which of course costs us more because people are not getting the type of long-term treatment they need, and it's done in an expensive way. But hey, that's you know, not what the Bush administration sees things as going down as. Well, let's see. I think we have another caller on the line. Let's bring that caller on. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning. I was hoping you could share more with the audience and myself too about something another caller called about, and saying you don't have to have a driver license and what that's all about, and you only use it for a job, because I think that's pretty important. Like, if you don't need one, then this ID thing shouldn't really be bothering us, right?
Well, yeah, the previous caller has been arguing that case, that the language in the law is such that it states we don't need a driver's license. I'm not sure that he has the facts on his side or the law on his side, but I don't want to, you know, put words in his mouth or try to represent him. I would suggest you maybe you'll find him down there at those DMV meetings. Personally, as far as I understand, you know, we don't have a God-given right to drive on the highways. That's something that, you know, falls under the powers of the state to police, and therefore they've set up a system where one has to show a certain amount of expertise and return, they're granted a driver's license and given permission to use the public roads. You don't need a driver's license if you want to drive around on your own property or private property, but you do if you want to do it on public roads.
If it's public, don't you have, like, a right to it? Like, you go to a public library, you don't need a license for that, right?
It seems. Yeah, well, yeah, you need a library card, don't you?
Well, that's to check out a book, like set up an account.
Uh-huh.
You don't really need an account to go places, right? It's just, or a park. You don't need a license going to a park or... Anything public. Why roads?
But, well, because you're operating vehicle. Well, for one, you're operating vehicles on the road, and the license is really about giving you, you know, showing, demonstrating that you have the ability to operate a motor vehicle safely, and that, you know, therefore you're granted the privilege of driving on the roads, on the public roads. And like I say, it's a matter of, you know, the ability of the state to police itself on those issues. This is not my area of expertise. I've had conversations with that caller before, and I don't know whether or not, you know, his arguments are soundly based in fact. So I would suggest talking to the DMV about it or attending those meetings. Like I say, he's down there on a regular basis. You'll know who he is when he'll be out there raising that issue. Okay?
All right. All right.
Sorry, couldn't help you more on that one.
Okay. I'm just thinking that it might be true what he's saying. It needs to be looked into more, because this ID thing is really important.
Well, I agree. ID is important. On the other hand, I personally would like a little regulation on who's out there on the roads. As it is, it's already, I think it's under-regulated. So, okay, well, you have a good one now.
You too.
And for folks just tuning in, this last 15 minutes or so, this is KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Barbara this morning, and we've been talking about RFID and the national identity legislation that's trying to impose sort of a national papers on us so we can be watched over more carefully. And if you want to join us in the last 15 minutes here in that discussion, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And let's take our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Yeah, I was listening to your discussion on drivers versus travelers. Are you aware of the difference between a driver and a traveler?
Why don't you tell us?
Driving's a privilege that's granted by a governmental organization,
mm-hmm.
and traveling's a right. You have the right to travel. You have the right to operate a motorized vehicle while traveling down the right-of-way. So the driver's license is actually it's a construct of the state.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't exist. Everybody just agrees to it. You consent. I have a question for you. You have to go to the Motor Vehicle Department to get an ID. Is that correct?
Well, you can get an ID from the Motor Vehicle Department.
Are you a motor vehicle?
Okay.
You have a good day.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Oh, yes. Well, let's move on to our next caller. I just don't even want to make a comment there. Good morning, caller.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
I got to turn down my radio.
Yeah, thanks for turning down the radio.
Dave, I've been feeding you this information for a long time, and I think you're not doing the listeners a service by coming straight with them.
Okay.
Operating a motor vehicle is a privilege, but the law currently says...
All righty. Let's move on to our next caller.
Okay. Well, I think I have an answer on part of this. The Declaration of Independence back in July 1776 said that all men are created equal, which means that there isn't anybody that holds any rights over us, and our government is whatever it is. You have to volunteer to be a citizen of the United States. If you don't volunteer, you're not a citizen of the United States, which means that you're not required to have a driver's license. But really what I called in about was the ID in your driver's license really isn't relevant when everything else that you have on your possession is tagged.
Right.
Because you just look at how fast Google is. When you type a search into Google, Google comes back with an answer immediately. If when you walk through the door of the grocery store, it reads all the serial numbers on your person, and then it matches you with that database, it instantly knows who you are. And it knows your buying habits, and it knows everything on your person. And that's not a good thing.
Far more invasive in terms of information than probably what they get through the DMV.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I
absolutely.
Agree.
And you can be tracked through every single door that you go through.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, if that's not regulated, the government can contract out to these different departments and buy this information as marketing information. They will know everything where you, they will know everything on your person, in your vehicle, when they pull up and they scan you. They scan your vehicle from their police car. They'll know everything on you and in your vehicle. They'll be able to match that up everywhere you go. Every doorway you walk through, they'll have the potential of knowing who you are, where you are, what you have on you, and who you've been around.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's true. And it's, you know, part of that, the other concern you were talking about, you know, they get in there looking in the different databases. I mean, there's, you know, ongoing claims by the administration of its right to do data mining, of, you know, being able to go in and dig through all the databases and to extract information on you. It's
yes, and as these databases get bigger and bigger and they start tracking everywhere that you've been and all of your buying habits, and they start putting all of that information together, your privacy is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Your personal, it's a bad situation.
Well, no arguments there. It's something that we need to stop. That's why, you know, the ACLU in California kind of tried to get ahead of the curve and really put a curb on what they were doing in that state around these, you know, driver's licenses and other uses of it. And I don't think it's necessarily not, they have the ideal answer, but at least they're raising the issue and putting up some fight, and we probably need to be doing this here in Oregon as well before it sticks up on us.
Then if Walmart forces all of their vendors to put these IDs in their products, you can be guaranteed that it's going to be in all the other products, because I'm not going to specially package one of my million items, you know, for Walmart and not do it for Fred Meyer's.
Mm-hmm.
It's economically feasible. It might as well go in all of them.
Yep. Yep, no argument there.
Okay.
All right, well, we got to move on because we have another caller, but thanks again for that. And let's bring on our next caller.
Good morning. You know, I'm just catching the tail end of the conversation, and you're talking about, like, things that identify us. An interesting thing that was going on in Oregon surrounded the gathering of DNA from felons. And interestingly enough, when that law was passed, it was supposed to be for, like, rapists and burglars and people who had a tendency to possibly endanger others.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually wound up being used for people who had a DUI or anyone who found themselves on probation, regardless of what their offense was for. And we were doing a report in our biology class, and we began to ask the questions. Now, for the people in the database, does that mean that if your great-great-grandchild goes out and commits a felony, it will still come back tagged in the database, not as you directly, but as someone directly related to you? And we were wondering, you know, how legal that would be in the court of law. And if this is going to be one of those things, kind of like the Social Security number issue, initially it was started for a purpose of protecting you so that you knew who you were and what you were entitled to.
Mm-hmm.
And it became one of those things that got so out of control that now we don't even want to use Social Security numbers because of the unintended consequence with identity theft. So, you know, I think that many things start out with good intentions, and naturally all it takes is one bad apple to somehow subvert the intention. So going back to the so-called protecting the citizens from these felons, and, you know, so how does that protect the rights of our children or maybe, you know, our future generations with respect to identifying us biologically? So there are more than one way of identifying us, and it just makes me wonder what's the purpose or the intent when, in fact, if, you know, they're saying it's the protection of us, but yet we have a government that continually abuses the voluntary so-called things that we give it. So I think it's up to us to protect ourselves and begin to, you know, once the cat is out of the bag, it's never back in. So all we can do is try to find solutions to protect us as people, in my opinion. But I just wanted to put that out there, this is the time we live in, and I think we're going to have to adapt to it, and we're just going to have to make sure that we protect ourselves.
Well, thank you. Good point.
Thank you.
And it's true. The cat gets out of the bag. We're in an interesting time where technology just continues to race ahead at a pace far too fast. We have new technology out there well before we can figure out what are the ethical ways of using that technology. In a democratic society, you know, it makes it difficult to keep it democratic when the government can have such powers over us and appear to be coming up with what seems like reasonable reasons to use it, although those reasons are beginning to get a little threadbare of late from this current administration. But I guess it goes back to me. It goes back to just, you know, the founders of this country recognizing that, you know, power, what power does, and that the only real safeguard is to divide up power and ensure there's checks and balances. And what we're seeing of late is a erosion of those checks and balances, a unifying of government in a way that this country's never seen before. And that's a frightening aspect. One of the first things the Nazis did when they took power was to begin breaking down those, you know, Germany had a state system of a federal system of sorts, even though it was, nominally a federal system, but there were state governments and what have you, and they broke down a lot of those barriers and unified things into a more national level. That's what's happening here today, and it's not good news for a democracy. So we need to be making these fights wherever we can to ensure that those checks and balances, what's left of them, remain. Let's see now. It's about 5 minutes left, and we have a couple of callers on the line. Let's squeeze them in before the hour's over. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Dave. Again, I'm glad to be squeezed in at this last moment. The reasons that this administration uses invariably are specious. And there's another animal analogy we could use, and that is the camel's nose inside the tent. Now, there's a couple of points I think are important. Number one, William Safire, of all people, Bill Safire himself, is way opposed to this. He points to a website called paperspleas.org. Fabulous. I went there a year ago. It may not be up still, but Papers Please is an expression that William Safire, the arch-conservative of the New York Times, just hates, and rightly so. And I want to remind you and all of your listeners that, remember, take your mind back to Bill Clinton and Al Gore, and they said, government needs to be more customer service friendly. This duo, this Clinton-Gore duo, which were as corrupt as any of the others, decided that we were customers, not citizens. Mm-hmm. And that is extremely troubling because it truly solidifies the concept that government, when it says it's all customer service, is in complete collusion with corporate powers or business powers that see us all as consumers, not citizens. And we need to reassert our citizenship and avoid citizenship. So there.
Thank you again. All right, and let's bring on our next caller. Good morning.
Hi, I was hoping you could help me figure something out. Now, I'm just 19, and I don't have as much life experience as a lot of the callers, which is unfortunate, but I was wondering why anyone would keep the people from knowing the law. Like, you cut off that caller who's about to read the law. Why is that?
Well, you know, we only have a certain amount of time here for callers, and he had already had an extensive period of time to talk about his position, and we needed to make room for other folks. And we've had conversations with him before, so that's why. And furthermore, you know, this is talk radio. People come on and can say what they think, but everybody has to take that with a dose of healthy skepticism. Just because you get on the radio doesn't mean what you're saying is true any more than I'm, you know, some sort of source of 100% accuracy. So just keep that in mind, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, and you have a good day. And, well, I think we're getting pretty close to the end here. It's been a lively hour and a half talking about these wonderful chips, the RFIDs. I hope people will take time out to check out www.realnightmare.org. It has a lot about the national ID legislation and what's that doing. I would also encourage people to go to the ACLU site, which is www.aclu.org, and that gets you into the campaign on the RFIDs as well. Gives you some ideas what's happening, and you might want to start calling your legislators and asking them where they are on this issue, both at the national and at the local levels, and start raising that issue right now before it gets too late. So we're going to wrap it up, and thanks for participating in a morning of good discussion, and y'all have a good day now in Portland here. Bye now.